Welcome back to A-E-I-O-U, a podcast about Austria. This is Thames Darwin. The last episode ended with the Peace of Augsburg, a first attempt to settle the issue of religious conflict between Catholics and Protestants. If you've ever heard of the Thirty Years' War, then you know that the Peace of Augsburg did not hold. And if you've never heard of the Thirty Years' War, you will have heard of it before this episode is through. The problems with the Peace of Augsburg were several. For one thing, while it recognized Lutheranism as a legitimate faith, it didn't do the same for Calvinism or for other new denominations. In Hungary in particular, but also in parts of Burgundy, soon to be the Netherlands, this was a problem. It also proved to be a problem in Cologne, where Ferdinand's provision that ecclesiastical states were exempted from following the faith of the bishop when the archbishop there became a Calvinist and did not resign his office. This resulted in a short war and a Catholic victory, but pointed out the shortcomings of the Peace of Augsburg. This occurred after Ferdinand became emperor, which happened shortly after the Peace of Augsburg when Charles, exhausted, abdicated the throne. He did, however, split his dominions, leaving Burgundy and Spain, including its empire, to his son Philip. The son had set on the world's largest empire being ruled from Vienna. Ferdinand ruled as emperor for less than a decade, during which he came to a settlement with Hungary and Bohemia and secured Habsburg rule there, at least for a while. Like Charles, Ferdinand also divided his lands among his heirs. His son, Maximilian II, would become emperor and would also rule Hungary and Bohemia. Austria, however, would be divided again into three parts. Two other sons, Charles and Ferdinand, would rule Inner Austria and Further Austria, respectively. Maximilian II would rule Austria proper, today's Upper and Lower Austria, the original Margraviate. Maximilian II served as emperor and archduke for 12 years, during which he adhered to a general policy of religious tolerance. This was no small feat because the Catholic Church had convened a council in Trent, a city in Tyrol that is now in Italy, to address the Reformation and ultimately launch a counter-reformation. At Trent, the Church ultimately decided to address corruption in the Church but refused to budge on most doctrinal matters. Maximilian's commitment to tolerance was such that he refused to allow the council's decrees to be published. Maximilian's toleration was echoed by his son Rudolf when he took the throne in 1576, even extending this toleration to Jews. Also like his predecessors, Rudolf fought the Ottomans, his war with them going on for 13 long years and ending inconclusively. During the war, Hungary revolted against Rudolf and demanded that his brother and heir, Matthias, be made king of Hungary instead. Rudolf was forced to concede and, to his brother's chagrin, Matthias made peace with the Turks. Outraged, Rudolf tried to restart the war, but with popular support in Hungary, Matthias successfully prevented a reopening of hostilities. Matthias imprisoned Rudolf and forced him to concede his other titles to him. Rudolf died 9 months later. As emperor and archduke, Matthias proved less decisive. Instead, the key figure during Matthias's reign was his chief advisor, Cardinal Melchior Klesel, the Bishop of Vienna. Klesel had been born a Protestant but converted to Catholicism as a teenager and took holy orders as a young adult. Under Rudolf, Klesel had been one of the key figures in the Counter-Reformation, which he pursued with a moderate hand, seeking to make concessions to bring Protestants into the Catholic Church. Under Matthias, he became a de facto cabinet minister. In this position, he continued to pursue conciliatory policies with the empire's Protestants. For doing so, he incurred the wrath of more conservative monarchs and the emperor's family. Klesel was ultimately arrested and imprisoned in 1618. That year was a monumental one in Austrian history as well as European history overall. It was the year in which the Thirty Years' War began. We will get to the war soon, but first we should talk a bit more about the Counter-Reformation and how it unfolded in Austria. While much of the historiography has tended to depict the Counter-Reformation in Austria as the authoritarian reassertion of Catholic domination, Joseph F. Patruch argues in his book, A Negotiated Settlement, The Counter-Reformation in Upper Austria Under the Habsburgs, that the process was far more extensive and laborious, particularly in Upper Austria. In contrast to the near-uniform Catholicism of the Upper Austrian population on the eve of World War I, by the middle of the 16th century, Protestantism was widespread in the area, constituting the faith of the majority of the population, largely as the result of the area's proximity to the Protestant hotbed of Bohemia. Patruch characterizes the Habsburg monarchy as holding a fundamentally weak position during this period, facing the opposition not only of the predominantly Protestant nobility of Upper Austria but also of the peasant population, which had become accustomed to Lutheran innovations in the Mass, such as communion in both kinds. The congregation drinking wine, a privilege previously held only by clergy, in addition to eating a consecrated host, and the clergy itself, which had taken to breaking its vows of celibacy at an alarming rate. Virtually all of the rulers of Austria through the Reformation had invested heavily in the church's presence in Austria, creating new parishes and especially monasteries. The monasteries were under the direct control of the crown but also subject to the authority of the Bishop of Passau, across the border in Bavaria, himself appointed by the Pope and thus an exemplar of Catholic orthodoxy. In contrast, the peasants fell under the direct political authority of the Herrschaften, the local nobility, which while technically subject to rule by Vienna nevertheless enjoyed substantial autonomy in local affairs. In addition, the Herrschaften were subordinate to a regional assembly of estates that met in Linz, the Upper Austrian capital, and that was often in conflict with Vienna over religious questions. As noted previously, as a result of the political situation in Upper Austria, to reassert Catholic authority, extensive compromise on the part of the crown was necessary, as well as the ability to maneuver among multiple levels of political and religious authority. Since the monasteries were directly under the crown's authority, they provided a natural starting point for the reassertion of Catholic predominance. As Patruch writes, when the political constellation, that is, in Upper Austria, changed, this foundation could and did serve as the basis for establishing Habsburg authority, together with the authority of ecclesiastical representatives allied with them as a component of the Counter-Reformation. End quote. The initial reassertion of orthodoxy took the form of rooting out married clergy, a campaign that took up much of the first decades of the Counter-Reformation. Although this measure was met with substantial resistance by the clergy and peasantry both, Patruch argues that the promise of the withdrawal of new rights enjoyed by women during the Reformation offered an incentive for certain local and clerical authorities to abandon resistance. However, it was only after the crushing of the Bohemian Revolt in 1620, a point to which we will return shortly, that the Protestant nobility in Upper Austria was sufficiently cowed for the crown's counter-reformation efforts to escalate. The Peace of Westphalia at the end of the Thirty Years' War ultimately settled the matter, but we're not yet there. As noted, the counter-reformation in the Habsburg hereditary lands was ultimately quite successful if religious affiliation in the early 20th century is any metric. But perhaps the greatest threat was not Luther or the Schmalkaldic League but a revolt in Bohemia that engulfed the continent. It's time again to define a term. Today's word is defenestration. It means to throw someone out a window. Prague, the capital of Bohemia, has seen more than its share of these events. The first defenestration occurred in 1419. When Hussites attacked members of the Prague City Council and killed seven by throwing them out of windows from the town hall. It happened again in 1483 when again Hussites killed seven city councillors from the town hall. The most recent defenestration happened in 1948 when the foreign minister of Czechoslovakia, Jan Marasek, fell from a bathroom window of the foreign ministry building. 75 years later, it remains unclear whether it was a suicide or a murder. But arguably the most significant defenestration of Prague occurred on May 23, 1618. The story begins with rumors of closures of Protestant churches in Bohemia. Daniel Yuta describes events thus. In the spring of 1618, this led to an official complaint from the Protestant estates to Emperor Matthias in Vienna. The emperor, however, brusquely dismissed the complaint and forbade the delegates of the Protestant estates to assemble for any political council in the future. Bohemians reacted indignantly to this news, suspecting that the forces desiring the recatholicization of the Kingdom of Bohemia had gained the upper hand among the Habsburgs. He continues, disregarding the ban on assembly, the representatives of the Protestant estates gathered in Prague to discuss their course of action. After 2 days of deliberations, a group of roughly 200 estate representatives set out for Prague Castle, the center of Habsburg rule in Bohemia. End quote. Two Catholic regents met the protesters inside the castle. Yuta writes, assembled in the chamber of the Bohemian Council, the Protestant representatives read out their protest message. The two regents then had the opportunity to defend themselves and, predictably, they rejected the grievances. But their spurious arguments, which were little more than delaying tactics, did not convince the Protestants, who immediately proceeded to an ad hoc trial. The verdict was that the men should be brought to justice. End quote. So the two men were thrown from the nearest windows, as well as a secretary who was present. All three men survived, by the way, having fallen into a pile of manure. But the damage was done. The Habsburgs would have to respond, and they did. With a Catholic victory, Bohemia would remain under Habsburg control until World War I. However, though the revolt in Bohemia was over, the Thirty Years' War had just begun. It would be difficult to overestimate just how cataclysmic this war would prove to be. Some estimates state that up to a third of the German-speaking population of Europe died between 1618 and 1648. Perhaps as many as 8 million people, both military and civilians, died in the war. It is likely that no single war was as costly in terms of lives lost until World War I. The only upside to all of this destruction is that, arguably, the war would settle once and for all the issue of religion in Central Europe. After 1648, Europe would enter a new age of reason based in part on the end of religious conflict. That age is what we call today the Enlightenment. With victory over the Bohemians, the attention of the Habsburgs would turn now to the Palatinate, and that's where we'll pick up in the next episode. Thanks for listening.